The following podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com. And now get ready, because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 155 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we take a break from the chaos, the mortal danger, and the perils of interstellar adventure just to enjoy a leisurely trip to a serene Scottish loch. The locals have their silly superstitions about ghosts and ghouls, but psh, we're with the Doctor. And if he's taught us anything over the decades, it's that there's no such thing as ghosts. Right? Right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Never.
I'm your host, Haley, and the guys tonight are Keir. How are you tonight, Keir?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm doing okay. And also Jay.
Yeah,
how are you, Jay?
I don't get to be one of the guys, apparently. Keir is the guys. I'm just the guy. I'm me.
They're the guys. And they're sick. Well, after that, editing is complete. So this week, we are going to allow absolutely no rest for the wicked and just leap directly into the barely opaque arms of the episode Under the Lake, which is the first half of another Series 9 two-parter, this time coming from the mind and the pen of writing alum Toby Whithouse. So seems, for all intents and purposes, this is a classically styled trapped-in-a-can siege adventure with a couple of unusual twists and a good old cliffhanger that we can really sink our axes and our harpoons into. So let's dive right in, shall we?
Water humor. It's great.
Planning that one.
So this one really did seem like a callback to the old Troughton days, where, you know, it's just base under siege. You know, there's a lot of tropes that we've seen before and a lot of similarities to even for New Whovians looking back at The Impossible Planet. Yeah, I mean, this seems very familiar, but it wasn't, at least for me, it didn't feel like it was tired, you know? And that's one of those interesting things, that you're able to take something that we've seen over and over and over again and still make it engaging. It was great.
It was definitely, you mentioned tropes. There were certainly a lot of the elements there. You're like, oh, okay, all right, we're going to do that one. Sure, got it. Okay, oh, well, there's the guy who represents the big bad business and such. But then there were enough little flips on those that it didn't feel contrived. So the guy who was going to be the snarky little dirtbag representative of the Vector group dies.
Yeah. You know,
35 minutes into it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that just robs him of the entire, oh, okay. He's going to be one of the, oh, he's a ghost now. Oh, wait. Oh, so we're going to deal with ghosts here. Oh, the Doctor's going to cut the legs off him. Oh, wait a minute. He's actually embracing the idea that these are ghosts? Wait
That's
a
awesome.
Second.
Who are you and what have you done with our Doctor?
So this is, you know, and I went into this thinking, okay, this is going to be another one of those, everyone's saying, oh, ghost, Scooby, Shaggy, run. And the Doctor's there saying, there's no such freaking thing. Look, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. And right from, I don't even know what the timestamp was on it, where he looked and he gets this grin.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you realize what this means? They're ghosts. And he's getting all excited about it. I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
It was great. And honestly, I was really caught off guard by Richard Pritchard, which, you know, fantastic name. Love it. I was really caught off guard by him dying, because normally it's the douchebags that make it to the end. I mean, you think back to the Titanic episode, last year with Flatline, you know, it's like the ones that are the most despicable people that we want to see die are usually the ones that survive to the end. So when he died, I was like, whoa, that's different. Did not expect that.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, and then we've got some things that still have us kind of scratching our heads a little bit now. Granted, it's a two-parter, so we've got some questions yet to be answered. But just in terms of some of the decisions for the episode that we're still kind of pondering, we do have use of the sunglasses. Okay, so
yeah.
That's noted. And we've got a little bit of news that'll testify to how long that's going to stick around. But then things like some of the character choices. So your captain dead within the first minutes.
In the cold open, yeah.
So, and then we've got a couple of existing crew members, or I should say currently surviving crew members, who are serving some kind of interesting roles. The cast character, I think, is one that a lot of people are talking quite a bit about in the course of the week,
right?
Because of some of the obvious choices about the nature of the character. But before we dive into that, there's also her translator.
Yeah, Lun.
Who I'm still trying to figure him out. He's the layperson, so to speak, the civilian among this crew, and yet Cass is very protective of him.
Yeah.
To a great degree. And I think there's more to explore there too.
Oh yeah. And I mean, one thing I love is the diversity of the crew. I mean, the different kinds of people that they bring to it, and then the only white guy on there is, the douchebag who dies. It was great. But
well, and then the mole man who's
yeah,
he's pretty white.
Yeah.
He's kind of ghostly white.
Kind of white.
Ghost humor. It's fun. Kier's full of the puns tonight. It's great.
Not good ones, right. But puns.
Well, so take some of the things that we know. So, this unusual ship, sort of partially dredged from the bottom of this Scottish loch. We thought we were gonna have like a Nessie episode. I'm still not ruling Nessie out, because you saw in the cantina when they were going in there, there was that big Leviathan mural painted on the wall there.
Yeah.
There's got to be something to that.
Yeah. No, that's going to be the secret of the ghosts, is to actually, something tied in with the Loch Ness Monster. And it's just, yeah, that'll be great.
And it has been stranded at this lake bed. I've got my theories, but I'll save them to the end here.
No, I love the way that the pacing of this episode worked, because even though it's a two-parter, they really did do a lot to save time. Like, we basically get a voiceover at the beginning saying, oh, we brought this ship on board, instead of, actually showing them bringing it on board. And I mean, you think back to the classic era, if this were a Troughton story, the entire first episode would have been dedicated to them bringing the ship on board, so they did that. And then, when they discovered the stasis pod or whatever, it's just like, oh, hey, look at that. And then it's on board. You don't need to see them bring it on board. You understand it's brought on board, but they do things like that so that they can give the time to, to like the interaction between the Doctor and Clara in the TARDIS, where, it's dragged out a little bit longer and to great effect. So they really were able to cut a lot of the stuff that you don't need to see represented to give it to the spots that really did need the time.
Got to be a budget saver too.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Saving on the CGI.
But not to the episode's detriment, I think.
I think it worked great.
Yeah, the ghost aspects were kind of, well represented and things. That ship, that craft they brought in looks really cool. I mean, and stylistically, even just some of the things like the transition from day mode to night mode and those things, and subtle lighting changes, but all of the color casting over the entire thing, it just had a great kind of feel to it all around. I was really pleased with the aesthetics.
Yeah. And it felt like it was, we've seen the whole running through corridors thing. I mean, we talked about it last series with the heist job, what was the name of that episode?
Time Heist.
Yeah, that one. But, it's like, oh, we're in the blue corridor now. It's the same set. Whereas this one, it actually felt like they were on a base that was lived in, that was a functional place, instead of just, look, we built a corridor, and now we're running the other way down the corridor.
Mm-hmm. And now we're shooting the corridor from a different angle.
Exactly.
Is that one T intersection, though, that they use about every four episodes, and no matter how many layers of paint they slap on that thing, you're looking at it like, okay, I know where we are. I know exactly where we are. We're Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. We're, this, that, and the other episode. You got it all pegged.
I wonder if that set is shrinking as they add layers of paint to it.
Yes.
Soon they'll be walking down it sideways, just trying to get through.
There's plaque buildup in these hallways. Okay, well, we mentioned the fact the doctor's sort of taken an odd take on, or takes an unusual take on this spectral anomaly here. And that this episode has such classic adventure kind of feel to it. It seems like you put those two things together, and that almost explains why our 12th Doctor is so almost giddy over the nature of some of this this chaos, because this is the kind of stuff that he revels in.
Mm-hmm.
From the first point where, you know, the don't leave me hanging here thing, and he just looks over his shoulder with that smirk as he's just walking away, because she knows that he knows what she knows, and it's agreed upon, and they're having fun with it, until it goes sideways. He's still having fun with it.
Yeah.
It's what he does.
It was great. I enjoyed the play between Claire and the Doctor in this one. There wasn't a lot of it, and I've heard some people complain that, you know, the competent Clara from last week or the week before kind of fell by the wayside, and she was just another character to deliver lines in this episode. But I didn't feel that way. I felt like it was, you know, she was out of her depth just as much as the Doctor was, but he's more used to that situation, whereas she's used to, you know, in that situation, letting the Doctor take charge. And that's what she did. She didn't know what to do. So it was just like, I'm just going to get out of his way.
The only thing I had seen, there was somebody who actually put a couple of moments together. They did them sort of asynchronously, but they had put together all of these little moments and lines that either Clara delivered or were delivered to her or at her from this episode that sort of painted her in a kind of a lonely light. You know, the things like, I left my sunglasses there and a lot of my dignity. That's one of the ones that kind of kicks it off. The don't leave me hanging thing, the leaving her on the other side of the glass as the corridor fills. And there's just these moments where she's just kind of being pushed aside. She's being marginalized either overtly or through just the series of events in that particular scene. And I didn't really catch it until they lined them all up, and there was at least a half a dozen of them. And I thought, wow, okay, well, I guess if you take that edit and cut the clips together that way, yeah, she did kind of get pushed aside in a lot of this. She was definitely just there to be an extra voice, but she wasn't really allowed to contribute a whole lot, except for when the Doctor's doing some of his exposition about the stasis chambers missing from the ship and the da-da-da. Did she seem, though, that when she was kind of, when they were kind of firing together, that she was coming across a little smug, like the self-assured nature that's been sort of building is starting to hit a bit of a peak at the moment, and she kind of feels like she can do all the joking around with the Doctor, and she can speak for him or with him as he's explaining something to a third character?
Yeah, I definitely think so, but I think that's what the exchange in the TARDIS was meant to address, where the Doctor, you know, pulled her aside and said, hey, you know, I'm the one here that's supposed to be like that. I understand that you're comfortable and you're confident and you're completely capable of doing a lot of things, but that's my role because you don't understand what kind of a toll it takes on you. And it was his chance to kind of pull her back and be like, look, enjoy what you have and don't try and take on the aspects of my job because it's not something you really want to deal with.
Right. Well, and he doesn't need another him on the TARDIS. He needs the other person to strike his balance.
He needs someone to write the cards for him.
Right. Someone to rein him in when he gets a little too doctory.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I guess the question is she really heeding that, or is it something where it's going to take a few knocks about and a few disasters to help her realize, okay, there's a limit to how Dr. Clara I can be.
I think more than likely we're going to see, if that gets addressed, we will probably see it in the next episode where, you know, the Doctor is, you know, a ghost. He can't be the Doctor because he's trying to kill them all. So Clara has to be the Doctor. And I think that that's probably going to make her realize just how dangerous and how difficult it really is and how much she needs to let him be the one to do it. Or it could go the other way and, you know, she could completely prove herself and the Doctor's like, okay, you're in charge now. You do this one, you know, and treating her more as an apprentice instead of an assistant.
Well, I kind of wonder if we're going to see the arc this season is Clara starting to be her own person again, because she's slowly just becoming the Doctor. And even he said, you know, you need to have a hobby or a relationship or something.
Mm-hmm.
And not even necessarily a romantic relationship, but the only person she's interacting with right now is the Doctor.
Right.
Yeah.
And she gravitates towards that ideal.
Well, yeah. And I mean, we saw that at the very beginning when she's like, you know, let's go on an adventure. Let's do something. You know, she's acting like the adrenaline junkie, and he's trying to kind of rein that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've seen that happen with a number of the companions, too, where they start to get so accustomed to it. I was going to say acclimated, but native's good. All right. What about our lack of translation for the Cass character? You know, a lot of people come forward and say, "I think it's great that we're involving, you know, characters with these particular disabilities to be representative and be, you know, intrinsic parts of a 2119, you know, subaquatic research crew and so forth." Don't really know what everybody's titles are or what their particular functions are within the crew there, but she apparently has a considerable amount of seniority. She's almost sort of like almost acting XO.
Yeah, she's second in command. So yeah.
So but there's this. They kind of wrote off in the script the fact that the TARDIS isn't translating because, you know, someone deleted sign language and replaced it with semaphore, which is, you know, it's humorous, and you think, okay, that's great, but. How is this just kind of a quick little blip in the script? Is just something clever that Woodhouse decided to include, or is there something more to this?
There's really no reason in story why the translation should not be working.
No, I think this was more of a practical thing of, you know, how do you really portray that? You know, the audience needs to understand what she's saying because most people don't understand British Sign Language. So how do you relay what it is that she's saying to the audience? Not necessarily the Doctor, but to the audience. And there's really no way to do that without having a voice to it. So that's where you bring in the character of Lun.
They could have done subtitles, but that would have gotten annoying.
And giving, I mean, it might have been just a byproduct of having him in there, but having the character of Lun, you know, being protected by Cassie and not going into the ship and not seeing the letters was a way of portraying, if you haven't seen the inscription, then you're safe from the ghost. Mm. So it worked out for the storytelling purposes as well.
I think it could have been something where I think if they hadn't even addressed it, you know, for the sake of putting in that little joke line, I think they could have just let it go. And the fact that Lund's there to translate for the rest of the crew, Doctor and Clara happen to suddenly have this understanding. You know, Clara might even remark the fact that, you know, I never took sign language, but okay, I follow what she's saying. And you know, Doctor leans over, right, artist handles it, it's a language like any other, and kind of leave it at that, but let the translator continue to do his work for the benefit of the other crew members. I think that might have possibly gone over a little smoother.
Maybe, yeah.
Because we've had, you know, we were having, our friend of ours, you know, Badger was having this observation about the about that and just saying that if it was a matter of telepathy or any of these other instances where we've had these alternative communication forms that have still been have been accepted or incorporated into what the TARDIS accomplishes. By saying that it's a language that's been deleted, that's odd.
Yeah.
You know? Then you wonder, who's been mucking around with the language pack, you know, or whatever the case may be.
It was Missy. Just
it was in
pranks.
The Squidgy console, and Clara moved her pinky wrong.
I think that it may have been addressed simply for the purpose that, you know, if this was a classic episode, we would have had like 5 or 10 minutes of explanation about how the TARDIS was able to translate it instead of you know, actually having to understand that it may have been in there just as a way of like, hey, look, we understand it's supposed to do this, but we're not doing it for this episode. So just here's a joke, run with it. You know, it could it have been handled better? Yeah, probably. But I don't think it's something that people should really be hung up on. It was needed for the audience to understand what she was saying. So let's just go with it.
Anytime you know that with the nature of this show and the way that it gets, you know, micro scrutinized, and especially anytime you're going to be bringing up any sort of minority groups or groups with disabilities, that you're putting yourself under particular scrutiny. So yeah, it was bound to happen.
Yeah.
So okay, well, but what about, well, let's take the nature of the mystery as it's been set up for us here. Craft's been taken in, components missing from inside the vehicle, as far as the Doctor ascertains. These ghosts are multiplying. through the nature of their victims. They are kept at bay during day mode, whatever that really quantifies, because if it, all it is just a lighting shift, the doors lock or unlock, the doors really have no implications on the, you know, on whatever these things are, but I don't know if the lighting does. Doesn't look particularly dark when they go into night mode. It's just blue filter mode. But they are able to hide from it within a Faraday cage. And if anyone's ever seen lightning experiments at your local science museum, the Faraday cage is what they climb into so they don't get electrified by the Tesla coils that are going off around them. So right. We have some sort of electrostatic buffer that keeps them out.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a scientific explanation. It's an alien life form, or it's, you know, some sort of advanced alien technology or something along those lines.
Like a projection from the alien ship or something like that. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not really ghosts.
What? Whoa. How can you base that? That's
You're defying the doctor here. Even he believes.
No, but I mean, you think about it, and like, what's the one thing, like going back to the Pindall episode from, I think it was series 6, you know, where everything's creepy and we're all freaked out, and then Amy becomes a pin doll. And then at that point you realize, oh, okay, this is completely reversible. And all of the threat is taken out of it. I feel like it's the same thing. The doctor is now a ghost. Okay, this is reversible. We'll be okay.
Right. Well, if it had been one of the other people that had gone in the TARDIS with him, then there would still be some tension.
Yeah, absolutely. But because it's the doctor, it's just, no.
And I don't even think it's necessarily the doctor that you're seeing. Well, because obviously the physical body is still just like our friend Pritchard, who's floating around there, bumping up against the exterior of the glass. You know, our captain, who apparently got vaporized because when they went back in there after the fire alarms had shut off,
so much there.
There was not even a pile of ashes. But assuming that, you know, whatever, once you look at that inscription on the wall, since it's looking, you know, it's, you're standing within the craft at that point. The craft is taking some sort of a holographic image of that individual. Somehow it screws up the eyes. Can't. It's like a good artist. God, I can't do eyes. I can't draw hands. Damn it! They're all gonna wear gloves. But the doctor's whole theory about them, you know, the pilot leaves the writing on the wall. Whoever sees it, when they die, they become a beacon of these coordinates that are pinging out there, which is totally Loch Ness. So, you know, that Nessie was some sort of this Leviathan alien that's stuck there. And is just waiting for more beacons, which explains why Mole Man was the first person to die. He was probably like the preacher who was the last person who stayed in the village when they flooded it to form the lake. Mm-hmm. And he refused to leave his parish. And he saw the inscription, so he was the only one to have his little ghost image that's been sitting there waiting at the bottom of the lake for however many hundreds of years. And now he's got a chance to, or this protocol, this program, this whatever this is, this, you know, holographic image now has its opportunity to start to replicate and boost signal. There you go.
Yeah, I can buy that. I'll go with it. So what do you guys think is in the stasis pod? Like that's one of the mysteries that we've got left for the next episode. So what do you guys think? The doctor.
Maybe Nessie.
Nessie's eggs.
It's always about eggs.
I honestly was thinking it was the Mole Man. That was the thing that I kept on going back to, was that's probably who it is.
Okay.
Maybe.
How would that work then?
Okay, wait, who went in the TARDIS with the doctor?
I don't remember now.
Didn't somebody go with him?
Yeah.
Didn't the group got split in half?
Yeah.
And two people went with him.
Two people with Clara, two people with the doctor. I want to say it was O'Donnell and Scared Guy. I don't remember his name.
Yes, okay. perpetually scared techie guy, yeah.
So maybe Mole Man is an older version of Scared Guy.
Yeah, I'm not taking that Victorian garb. Yeah. Well, it's not even Victorian. It was like...
Old-timey. We'll just...
It's one of them old-timey.
The old clothes.
Yeah. I don't know. You're on your own on that one.
Okay. I got this nice cozy limb all to myself.
All right. Now three shiny quarters sitting on the table.
All right.
And then obviously there's just the split up, the separation. Are there going to be any sort of repercussions about the doctor breaking off from her, letting her go? I did this for your own good. I did it because you were holding me back. I did it because I don't genuinely like you. I did it. So do we have any post-traumatic stress issues that we're going to have to deal with because of that moment?
I don't know. It depends on how it gets played out. Like I said before, I think it's going to be the opportunity for Clara to really stretch her legs and become the Doctor for an episode, you know, similar to what we saw in Flatline last season. If they go that route, then no, I don't think that it's going to be a traumatic thing. Or if it is, it's just going to be like, okay, you are right. You're the Doctor. I'm the companion. That's our roles and we're set. And that'll pretty much be the end of it. If it turns out that things go horribly wrong and, you know, everyone's dying and things are bad and Claire is to blame for it, then yeah, I could see it playing out that way. But I don't think that's the route that we're going to go.
Gotcha. Okay. There is also the fact that since we know that these ghosts only go after these spectral anomalies only go after individuals once they've seen the inscription because they're a potential amplification of that beacon signal.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that your translator, Lund, is the only one who's not going to be attacked.
Right.
So he could be the end around to be utilized at any point. Because he's of no value, dead, I guess.
Right. Although technically, even though we know the actor can speak, the character of Cassie, we haven't heard her speak at all. So what good would she be as a beacon or as an amplifier if she can't actually speak?
I don't know.
So
she shrieked. I don't even know. I'm not even sure exactly how it is that they're communicating. Their mouths are moving, but how are they actually sending some sort of a signal?
Yeah. I mean, they left a lot of questions unanswered, and that's great. I mean, I want to watch the next episode just to find out all of the answers from everything that's left hanging.
How did you feel about the whole the sussing out of what they were mumbling about the sword and so forth, and figuring out the alignment of planets and that whole thing? Did that seem like an acceptable explanation, or did it seem like something just sort of put together for the sake of it sounded complex and mysterious?
Are you talking about her figuring out the lip reading or the Doctor's interpretation of that?
The interpretation.
Oh,
you know, the line them all up with rubber balls and
wavy hands, sciencey stuff.
Yeah,
that's what I felt about that.
Okay, just want to make sure I wasn't alone on that. I mean, I thought maybe I just wasn't giving it enough time to process. But then on a rewatch, I looked at it again and said, yeah, well, it was just very clever. Boy, you figured that out fast.
Yeah.
Thanks for explaining it very
quickly. It was a good visual representation to kind of explain to the audience, and that was about it.
Mm. Okay.
But no,
I think it didn't derail anything. I didn't feel like I was taken out of the episode or anything.
I was a little bit, because if we were at the end of the point of Orion's sword, then all we would see is one of those stars, and it wouldn't be part of our constellation.
Quit applying actual science to Doctor
Sorry.
Who. Jeez. It's what you get for
it's
having an
engineer. Orion's belt buckle. Just one dot.
Yep. Yeah.
But I do like the fact that I was watching an interview with Toby Whithouse, and that the whole character of Cassie came out came out because they needed someone to be able to lip read, and so it made sense. Okay, well, deaf people usually acquire that ability or teach themselves that ability, so that the whole character formed out of that one necessity to have someone lip read. And the more it came about, the more they fleshed out the character, the better the character became. And I really feel like that's the Doctor admires her. I mean, he told her, he's like, when I'm not in the room, you're the smartest one. And because she sees things that other people don't, and he understands that while she may be, quote unquote, disabled, she's actually, she's actually able to pick up on things that other people don't, because she has to compensate. And he admires that in her.
Right. So a lot of people got very quickly endeared to that character. Mm-hmm. And they're looking forward to seeing, more use of her.
Yeah. So everyone that was complaining about Davros being kicked out of his chair last week, you can stop now. Just it's atoned.
Yeah. Where do you go from here? All right. So any other big ponderables going into by the time we get to After the Flood next week?
So if the TARDIS was scared of the ghosts, but she has no problem taking the Doctor to his apparent demise to become one of the good. Like that, I'm still waiting to see how that really plays out, because that didn't make a lot of sense to me. It's like, oh no, I don't want to be around the ghosts, but oh, I'll completely take you to become one of them. That's perfectly fine. Like,
well, unless we find that the ghosts don't necessarily have to kill you to copy you. which explains how the Doctor ends up surviving this. And yeah. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Surprise, the Doctor regenerates in the next episode, and this is Peter Capaldi's last full episode as Doctor.
Oh, man. No.
You don't think that's going to happen? Okay.
No, we haven't seen the Velvet Suit yet. They can't kill him yet. Oh. Priorities, woman.
All right. Well, Haley's part of the program. Quotes and favorite moments drawn from this episode?
Ooh.
Particular
the flashcards.
Yeah, the flashcards were brilliant.
And there's a link out there. You have to find it. I forgot to bookmark it, where they give an explanation of what was written on all the cards.
Yes.
The crew came out and said, "Oh, in case you were wondering, because we got some good ones in here. These were good. We didn't get a chance to use them, but they were hilarious."
Yeah, it truly was great. I enjoyed it. I have to say, the whole not only the dialogue, but also the way that they move the camera during the the kiss it to death monologue. When he's talking about, just I love the way that he delivered that. I mean, one, that was brilliant performance. I love that. Even though we heard it in the trailer, just seeing it in the episode, just it worked so well, and I loved it. And then the way they moved the camera, like they started it real low, and then it just kind of zoomed in slowly on his face, and it worked so well. And the whole scene just was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good having the greater context for that little clip now too. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's dealing with this, he thrives on these puzzles. He loves having things that strike him as unusual. But now he's dealing with something where, as he says, it's every time that he thinks he's got it figured out, or anytime he thinks it couldn't get any stranger or any more extraordinary, this thing surprises him. It's impossible. I hate it. It's evil. It's astonishing. Yeah. I want to kiss it to death. And that sums up where he is at this point so succinctly. Mm-hmm. Excellent job by Whithouse, including a line that has that kind of subtext to it at this exact moment in the series, because that's entirely where he is. He's at the moment, oddly enough, he's not thinking at all about Gallifrey. We're just going to go out and have some adventures, do all these things. But a good mystery, a good deadly, perilous puzzle, despite the fact that it's evil and he knows that he hates it, it still astonishes him and fascinates him, and he has to get roll his sleeves up and get fully.
Oh yeah, and I mean you can apply it retroactively too. Think about all the times that David Tennant walked up to something and be like, "Oh, you're beautiful." That's exactly the same kind of emotion that he's feeling right here, just expressed much more deeply. But, oh man, I don't know. I feel like depending on how the second episode goes, they've definitely hit a home run with this one. I feel like this was a great start to a two-parter. And I mean, that's two in a row we've gotten now, where the first part was just absolutely fantastic setting up for the second part. And I really hope that the second part can live up to it.
I've got really high hopes. I mean, we've never really been let down by any of Toby's episode before. And with what appears to be a really deft hand right now at structuring these two-parters for very specific intent. We want to have that classic feel of the turn, shake the whole box, dump the puzzle pieces over, confuse the hell out of them for 43 minutes, slap them with the closing credits, and give them a week to just ponder.
Yeah.
And it's doing exceptionally well. Well, for us who are sticking around watching as these numbers are plummeting, and
they're going to cancel the show.
The Whovian sky is falling. Now we all have to, get really invested in YA Whovian fiction.
That'd be a really great segue to go into the stats, but unfortunately, Keir has kind of taken over setting up the show notes lately, and so obviously they aren't included. They vanished. They were there, and now they're gone.
If you want to know how bad the statistics are and what it means for the detriment of the show, go pick up the latest copy of The Mirror, because I'm sure they'll be more than happy to tell you about how rugby has driven a stake through both hearts. Doctor.
Well, it's rugby, though. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. We did get a little bit of feedback on this episode, though. So we reached out, and Preston wrote to us on Twitter and said, "I'm so emotionally invested with Capaldi's Doctor. I forgot how I was in love with the show before him. He must never leave." I am fully supportive of that statement. I feel that same way, too. I'm notorious for, like, I love the Doctor that's in front of me right now. I mean, I've got my favorite, but I always get so invested in the Doctor that's right in front of me at that moment. Like, even when I go back and watch the classic stuff, I'm like, man, Pertwee was fantastic. I love him. He's never going to leave. Oh, yay, we're into Baker now. Yay, McCoy. It's great. And it's just, that's how I feel, because all of them are fantastic, let's be honest. But there is something that Capaldi brings to it that is just far and above anything that I've seen in a long time, that really just adds so much to the show. And I love his portrayal of the Doctor. It's just amazing.
I think that brings out a higher echelon of work from the writers and production team as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that they were lackadaisical or something under Smith's tenure. You know, this wasn't something where, oh, we're going to be writing for floppy hands over here. Okay, I'm just going to phone this episode in this week or anything like that. not to say that in the least, but I think right now he's giving them an opportunity. He's sort of challenging them to say, all right, well, he's a classic fan in his own right. He always makes these suggestions about these things that he wants to see incorporated or brought back. Yeah, okay. If we do that, how can we do it right? You know, how can we do it respectfully, but still in a really fresh and entertaining way for people that might not get the reference, and it's still valuable to them? And it's challenging them. I think they're stepping up to it.
Yeah, and I mean, so far they've done a great job of it. Like, I've introduced a friend of mine to the show, and she, we recently got into the discussion of, she's like, I don't want to be called a Whovian because I don't know enough to really live up to that title. So what can I be called? And you know, it's just kind of fun having that interaction. I told her she's what we lovingly refer to as a Nuvian, and she's like, okay, I'm good with that one. That's okay. All right. But being able to watch this and gauge her reactions on it is fantastic, because I mean, I do have the background and the knowledge to really dig into it. And to, you know, when I see, you know, the Witch is Familiar, being able to pick up on the, you know, the similarities between Genesis and Daleks and stuff like that, it adds a lot to the show for me. But then going and watching, you know, watching her reactions to it and gauging how she feels about it, it kind of highlights a lot of things that I'm like, wow, I didn't notice how much effort is going into, you know, making sure that the Nuvians are included in this as well, and not feeling like they're left behind because they didn't pick up the reference of Davros guiding his hand to the cable. You know, they still get so much out of it as well. And it's a great job that they're doing with it.
Definitely agree. Yeah. And as we said last week, and I think we said the week before that too, these references are subtle enough that it gets them where they can appreciate it. It's like, all right, this is a really bad analogy, and I don't mean to insult anybody with it. It's like going to like a Pixar or another animated feature where there's humor in there that's on two levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's stuff for the kids, right, and there's the stuff for the parents as well. In that vein, there's stuff here that new Whovians are just gonna miss, and that's fine because it's not gonna draw anything from it. If they do realize, hey, there's something more to this, or the person who's sitting next to me who used to watch all those really old ones with the guys with the mop heads and the long scarves and stuff, yeah, they seem to be like bouncing on their couch cushion right now over something. I wonder if I should find out what this is. And then they go and do a little extra research for their own interest to get a fuller understanding. And that's great. And if they don't, they haven't missed the opportunity to be entertained.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say they haven't missed out on anything, but they haven't missed out on the opportunity to get entertained.
Right. The episode itself didn't lose anything for them. Yeah.
Quite.
Yeah. It's great stuff, though. They're doing a great job with it, and I'm loving it. All right. So we ready to jump into the news?
Yeah, quite a bit.
All right. So what's first on the list here?
Well, I figured we probably should just make mention of this because it did kind of like crack the Whovian interwebs open a few days ago. And then once everyone looked at the contents of the egg, everyone kind of went, oh,
well, there was reason for that, but yeah, well,
yeah, there was, and I did write a pretty extensive post to the site about this. So if anybody wants to get the kind of the extended edition of what this, all this hubbub was about, go ahead and jump over to GallifreyPublicRadio.com and read the latest post on here. There was this cryptic announcement back on October 1st, that the official Doctor Who Twitter account and their Facebook page and their Google Plus page and all their usual social media outlets said, big news coming in 4 hours. Whoosh. And they drifted back into the shadows again, the inky shadows. And the Whovian interwebs went ballistic with possible theories. They hashtagged it the big announcement, and they had 4 hours to let their imaginations run absolutely amok.
Right, which has never turned out bad when you do that with a Whovian.
Nope, because everything they came up with was absolutely realistic, incredible, and viable,
oh,
and
yeah.
the best interests of the show, and sure, you know, up to the point of, you know, like one of my personal favorites, bringing Adric back from the dead.
Yes!
So they were pitching everything. And granted, we played along with it too. We threw a couple things out there, like the Doctor's going to be hitting a mid-millennial life crisis. And he's after trading the sonic screwdriver for sunglasses, he's also trading the TARDIS for a German convertible. You know, we played along with it too, but no one really had any idea what the hell it was. Well, you come to find out that they're announcing that they are they're unveiling these plans for a new spin-off series targeted towards a young adult audience, referred to as, or titled Class, simply Class. And the executive production team includes Stephen Moffat, Brian Minchin, and it also includes the author, Patrick Ness, which everyone sort of, well, they congratulated him. It was oh, great. Okay, that's wonderful. And then there was a very interesting divide among the fan base. Once they got over the fact that, oh, that's what you're going to do? And, okay, and they just kind of walk off again. For the people that stuck around and wanted to find out a little bit more about this, there are some concerns. There's obviously, as is wont to happen, there's a lot of pre-hating going on.
No.
Saying, how could you bother? Yeah, you know, really? saying, how could you, you know, why are you wasting your energy on this when you could be doing this, that, and the other thing? And they go through their litany of other options. Some people were going after Ness as being inexperienced or ill-prepared for such a role. Well,
for, you know, a screenwriter, which I can understand their trepidation, but at the same time, you write a show. Then you can complain.
There's some arched eyebrows at the fact that they are, again, not really allowing much of an opportunity for diversification of gender roles of authority within the Whovian infrastructure. You know, maybe giving the reins to a woman who has proven herself within the ranks of, you know, and that argument as well. So there are some legitimate concerns. But as for the nature of the show itself or choosing to do this particular spinoff at this time, or what will actually, they're going to start shooting in spring of 2016, so you won't probably see it for, you know, until about the probably the third quarter. But I thought, you know, just the premise or the fact that they're doing something like this right now shouldn't be shunned. The pre-hating on the fact that, well, why are they doing this? Why? It's just going to be like the Sarah Jane Adventures all over again. Only it's going to be worse because you don't have Sarah Jane. You know, and it really, yeah. It's, you know, it's been getting kind of nasty. So I put on my best Pollyanna dress and I got out there and said, well, wait a second. There's got to be some positives to this. Knowing as much as everybody else about this show right now, which is jack all, you haven't seen a single line of dialogue. You have not seen a single frame that has been shot. You don't even know anyone who's cast in the thing yet. Give it a little time. Hate on it after you've watched it. So anybody's interested, go ahead and check out the post, you know, and chime in. I'd love to get a sensible discussion going in the comments on that post so we can see what people think about the whole idea of doing this sort of a spinoff at this point in time.
Right. I'm completely in the camp of let's see something first and then I'll make my decision. I'm not going to crap on it just because I know, like, you know, a brief synopsis of the possibility of what the show's about kind of thing.
Well, other stuff that we've got, other news that we know about, some things that are coming around the corner. We were wondering about how the single-handed episode that's going to be treated a little later this series was going to be done. You know, and how they were going to pull off the idea of the entire cast being Peter Capaldi. End of list.
See nothing wrong with this.
Right. Well, but there's, you know, there's a certain amount of concern that, oh, is this going to be one of those episodes where it's all introspective and he's been abducted and he's being held by captors he can't see in a white room and he's just going to have to pace back and forth and think his way out of it. Well, they literally came forward and said, no, this episode is not going to be the Doctor puttering around a white room. So, have you looked over this particular article? This is a pretty good one.
Yeah, I've looked over it a little bit, and it is interesting to see, and And surprisingly, not nearly as much Moffat-splaining as I had expected up front. They do actually talk about it, like, rather openly. And so it's... I'm excited about this episode.
You realize why you don't get too much Moffat-splaining is because it's actually Capaldi who addresses half the conversation. So as long as you're letting him do the talking, he'll always tell you straight. He and Brian Minchin are pretty straight shooters when it comes to this stuff. But and again, just another reason to just really look forward to the episode is we know that Rachel Talalay is going to be directing again. And to see what she's going to be doing when she is only working with Peter.
Oh, it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, can you imagine what she's going to be able to draw out of that? I can't wait for this. So,
yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
We also had in that same conversation, I don't know if it's necessarily being addressed for this particular episode. That's where I think some of the disconnect on the synopsis of this interview was conducted. But he did reiterate that the whole idea of the Doctor's face and the recurrence of a familiar face is going to be not only addressed, answered.
Yay!
So there you go. We still don't know whether we'll see Tennant wandering back into BBC Wales anytime soon.
Not anytime soon. They've already recorded the scene. Come on. Jeez. He and Capaldi got together.
They could always just have, you know, the camera from the opposite angle. You know, there's the Doctor running out of frame. Okay, Killian says, wait a second, hold on.
Yeah, they've never hidden the Doctors in plain sight under sheets in a special. No, that's never happened.
and again, Capaldi doesn't want advanced scripts because he likes being just as surprised so that he doesn't end up telegraphing things. If he happens to give a setup line in an earlier episode, he doesn't want to have cognizance of it so that it somehow provides, you know, causes him to, you know, put some facial affectation on or anything. He wants to be just as surprised as the audience. That's
Well, I can appreciate that as the professional explanation. You know full well he's just like, I want to enjoy the show just like everybody else. He's a fan. He wants to enjoy it. It's great.
Yeah. Right. What else we got some news-wise?
Oh, well, coming up December 1st, this has already become the entirety of my Christmas list. There's nothing else. We've talked about it before, but the official announcement has come out. The Doctor Who Lego set will be released December 1st. Yay!
And is it the set that everybody thought it was going to be?
No, it was not. They have released it, and it's instead of just giving you, you know, the Doctor and the TARDIS and something, they're giving you two of them. You get two Doctors, you get 12 and 11, you get Clara, you get a couple Daleks, you get a TARDIS, which then opens up and you can connect to the console so that it's actually like you're inside the TARDIS, and it's fantastic. And then also a significantly creepy, even in Lego form, Weeping Angel.
Yeah. So, yeah. Jay, why don't you expound a little bit on the creepiness of Lego Weeping Angel, shall
you? Okay. So, as anyone who has listened to the show for any length of time knows, Lego Dimensions came out recently. And they do have the Doctor Who Lego pack, which comes out in November, which I've already got pre-ordered. It's going to be here the day that it comes out. But in the core game, there is a Doctor Who level. So you play as Gandalf, Batman, and Wildstyle, and they get snatched by this flying blue phone booth and pulled into it, and there's this grumpy Scottish person, you know, basically telling them exactly what's going to happen. And it's fantastic hearing Peter Capaldi talk about how there is barely enough room in the TARDIS for Batman's ego. And hearing Gandalf refer to the Doctor as such a strange man and things like that. And it's like the ultimate nerdgasm. You know, using Gandalf to blast Cybermen? Come on. Brilliant. Yep. But anyway, you play through the level and the Doctor goes off and timey-wimey stuff. And you fight the Cybermen and then you get outside and there's like the cemetery. Okay, kind of. And then you see an angel statue in little Lego form. And I was like, oh, not cool. So I ran to the other side of the screen and the Weeping Angel kind of slid off the side of the screen. And then I realized, oh, wait, I'm going the wrong way. So I go back and there's the angel statue again in a different position. It was terrifying. So you go through this whole cemetery and I don't want to spoil anything, but you basically get to a point where you're inside this room and there's angel statues all over the place and the lights start to flicker.
Of course they do.
And then they come back up and you are surrounded. And you have to go through this level taking things apart and the lights are flickering and you keep getting surrounded and they keep moving. I was nearly in tears over a Lego game. My 13-year-old is sitting in the room laughing at me because I'm having a panic attack over a Lego game. But I mean, even in Lego form, they do it so well. It is very much like Blink, and it is terrifying. And I mean, well worth the price tag just for that one experience. But if you enjoy the Lego games, this is a brilliant addition to the series. It's absolutely fantastic, and just the Doctor Who level by itself is worth the price of admission.
Yeah, yeah. And then you'll go back and you'll buy your expansion packs, and then you'll go and you'll buy the Back to the Future packs so you can have Doc and the Doctor.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to be driving around in the DeLorean with the TARDIS sitting right there next to it. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Great Scott.
In additional news, as far as some other things that are going to be coming down the pike, we got some interesting stuff. As if we could fit anything more into our upcoming release calendar for awaiting Big Finish Productions, we have Unit Extinction coming around. We have that's in November. In December, we've got The Diary of River Song that's being released on us. Through it all, we've got we're going to start having the War Doctors releases coming to us about every 4 months, every 6 months, for the foreseeable future, for about, I believe, 3 installments. But they made an announcement this morning that packing in at the end of all of this stuff that they're going to be dropping on us within the Doctor Who range, because remember, they have a number of other tracks that they record as well. But they've decided, and I'll just give you the synopsis, that the Eighth Doctor battles for survival in the early stages of the Time War.
Sold.
Starring Paul McGann, directed by Nicholas Briggs.
Take
so it's
my
the
monies.
Time War. Yeah, from the earliest moments with the Eighth Doctor. So if you want to know how he got into the threadbare and weather-worn and emotionally exhausted state that you see McGann in Night of the Doctor, here's what gets you to that. So the Eighth Doctor, colon, the Time War, will not be in our hands until November of 2017. We will make a point of talking to him a little bit about this November when we see him for Long Island Who 3. But this is some good stuff.
Yeah, this has got me more excited than anything else they've announced recently. And I've gotten excited about damn near everything they've announced. Yep. But this is just far and above anything I could have hoped for, so...
Yes, you can head over to bigfinish.com. You can pre-order the whole thing for $20.
Mm-hmm.
And $20 now in November 2017 dollars is like $35. So,
Kier knows he's been there.
Yes, I didn't like it.
His kids were jerks.
Harley, we got to do something about your kids.
So the next news article that we've got, Moffat has done a little bit of talking. Obviously, Jenna Coleman is going to be leaving the show, and so that has brought up the question of who's going to be next. Who's the next companion going to be? And Moffat has said that there is a possibility that we might have more than one companion in the future. We might get back to the Flying Schoolhouse. It's great.
No.
I don't think that we're going to go that far, but he has said that the possibility of having more than one companion opens up stories and gives the writers more freedom to do things and can just generally add a lot to the show. So he's not opposed to the idea of having multiple companions.
Yeah. I mean, they had been running full tilt filming since January. And at the point when he sat down at this festival and they addressed some of these questions, he was actually pretty straightforward and forthcoming with these things. He explained things like, I think he had said something to the effect that he has not even at this point or at the point of this this particular conversation that he had, he confirmed that he genuinely does not know who the new companion is going to be. And he didn't even want to divulge whether or not they had started searching for Jenna's placement. So it's not, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that pretty much tells me that we're going to go all the way through the Christmas special and still not know.
Yeah, very probably.
Okay. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. No, and that's one thing that he says in the article is he says, you know, I love how long we get to grieve. And that is part of the process. You know, I mean, we knew that Capaldi was going to be the Doctor before Matt Smith ever left. You know, so it was one of those things, like, yes, we were sad to see him go, but we were excited about, you know, seeing Capaldi in the role. So it's, I'm excited to, you know, have that time to say goodbye to Clara and to have that time of just like, man, she's really gone. That's dang, really. And not automatically be like, okay, I want to see what this next person is going to do. I want to have that time to really let the whole impact of it sink in.
It almost makes me wonder if we're going to have the farewell as the close of the Christmas episode, and it becomes one of these kind of bittersweet holiday moments where he has to, you know, see her off, you know, and it's done tastefully. It's done, you know, no danger, no death, no dismemberment, anything of that sort. Just kind of a, you know, here, Merry Christmas. I'm giving you your life back.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I know our friend Steven over at Radio Free Scarrow got to interview Jenna Coleman at, I forget the name of the convention now up in Edmonton recently. I want to say Edmonton Expo or something, but, and it was a great interview. He did a great job. And that was one of the things that he kept poking. He's like, so what exactly happens? And you can tell where Capaldi is very straightforward and he'll tell you pretty much anything within reason. Jenna has spent a lot of time around Stephen Moffat. And at one point during the interview, she even said, like, somebody asked her a question and she was like, oh, see, this is why I need Stephen around. But she was very adept at saying, no, it's a great story, and it's I can't wait to see it on the screen. But that was about all the information that she gave. All right,
but and it's then all moot point now.
Yeah, yeah, because the show is really just it's done. We're seeing the end. Off. Yeah, just according to the fantastic people over at the Mirror. Yeah, let me just read you this headline. Doctor Who series could be scrapped in favor of a Sherlock-style feature-length specials due to crisis period.
Yes.
Because, yeah, this show's just in the tank. It's going down, abandoned ship. Yeah.
The article gets weirder as you go on, because it goes from, okay, they're considering a format change to go into a Sherlock-style, you know, we're going to do a couple of full-length kind of features rather than a 12 episode series. And so, okay, now you're going to get three, maybe four 90 minute installments or something of that effect. And they say, oh, this unnamed BBC source divulged these things with us because they're running scared from the dwindling figures and their viewing figures plunged below 4 million per episode installment and so forth. And now you go a little farther through the article, and then it becomes one of those things where they're saying, oh, but they're actually considering, as far as drastic actions go, rebooting the entire show again in 2017 with a whole new cast.
Jeez.
Really? But they at least make the attempt to get a little bit of confirmation. So they call the BBC and a spokesman says, we're only 3 weeks into the series. Go away.
Oh, man.
Sometimes I gotta wonder between the Mirror and the Star, or no, well, the Mirror, the Star, the Sun. Oh God, what is it with British tabloids? I don't understand. Just, well, it was nice doing this show with you guys.
Yeah, it's been fun. We had a good run.
It's a good thing we all have backup casts now.
Right.
Oh,
just one while it lasted.
So make sure you tune in to Crimson Comet or Starling Tribune or In Defense Of or any of the other casts here on the Gunna Geek Network, because
we're wrapping this one up.
We're selling the TARDIS console on eBay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I for one am really looking forward to next week's episode, to the Before the Flood, which is literally going to be Before the Flood. It's kind of cool. It's unlike the series opener, the titles of these two actually make quite a lot of sense, and I'm enjoying it. But,
didn't follow the Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar? The titles, the little subtle play on words never clicked?
Yeah, it wasn't quite as in-your-face as, you know, the Bells of St. John. But, yeah, but anyway.
Well, we can't be as overt as the Rings of Akaten.
There wasn't a ring in that entire episode. Jeez.
I think it was when they sang in circles.
Oh, that's, yeah, no, that, wait.
Or maybe because there was a lot of echo effects, it was ringing.
Upon multiple rewatches, Jay, it all makes sense.
Oh, okay. I can hear Starpie screaming from here. Right. Well, this has been episode 155 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, when I'm not in the room, you're the smartest person here.
This is Gear saying, surely just being around me makes you cleverer by osmosis.
And this is Haley saying, next week, Nessie.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.
All right, so we're doing something a little bit different this week. We're having a little bit of an after show here, just for fun. For anyone that has listened for a long time, normally we use Skype, and Skype failed us tonight, and so we have switched to Google Hangouts. So this is actually the first GPR cast that we've actually, aside from the ones we've recorded live at places, we've actually been able to see each other while we talk, and it's been a new experience. I kind of like this. This may not have to be a new setup.
You really got to clean your room.
Yep. Some of us need to make our beds.
One thing I've noticed throughout the entire time, and like I was going to say something 3 minutes in, but I've been biding my time, was that, Kira, you look like you are halfway, or like not even halfway, like you're starting the process of becoming a Cyberman with those headphones.
I like these headphones. My favorites. Hold on a second. I got my head mount nearby. I see how they compare.
Oh, you got your handles toy?
No.
So are we live on something?
No, we're not live.
Okay.
I'm going to put this in, like, instead of bloopers, this is going to go at the end.
Okay.
Let's see how this goes.
I figure this will give us our chance to ramble and just have our...
Okay.
Yeah, that's legit.
It's close, yeah. It's damn close.
Wait, hold... Put little teardrops on my
hold it. Hold it up again. Hang on. I want to get a screen capture. Hold it.
Move your microphone a little. Yeah. Okay, that'll work.
Kier, say something so that Haley goes away.
Delete.
There we go. Okay.
You know, you could have just clicked on his picture and it would have made him.
He doesn't know how Hangouts work. He's from Texas.
Do you realize how many years it has been since I've been on Hangouts? I don't get to do Hangouts anymore. I don't even know if Hangouts are still a thing. Jeez.
I was surprised you were able to start it without help.
Shut up.
Yeah. But no, Hangouts.
Well, you know what? He started it, but he couldn't actually get himself into it until like 15 minutes later.
Yeah, and then he was in it twice.
I'm sorry, Chrome crashed. It went stupid on me. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, sure, Chrome.
Well, I had to close out like the multiple porn windows, and that takes time. So
which ones make noise? One of these windows keeps groaning at me.
All right. Yeah. No. Well, no, I'll leave that part in. Screw it. This is the GPR After Dark.
All right.
So I don't know. This is kind of fun, just actually being able to like banter and ramble and not stay on topic because we're so adept at that most of the time.
Yes, true.
So for the one or two people that have actually listened this far, let us know if you enjoy this. I mean, I would mind throwing this on the end at every episode, but if nobody's going to listen to it.
Well, or at least have it available on site as an additional addendum. You get the after show on there.
I'm the one that has to post this stuff. That's extra work. I'm not doing it.
Okay. Well, it just means the difference between releasing an hour long cast and an hour 20 cast.
Yeah, it's
that's
okay.
Gonna shy anyone away.
Nobody pays attention to numbers. Jeez.
Nah. Told you.
I have been present for a 4-hour long podcast. Thank you, sir.
You want credit for that?
No, I was only there for like 15 minutes of it.
Well, I've been present for all day hangouts before, though.
Yes.
I do remember those days.
Oh, I think this is just a foot in the door. This is getting us on the way to something like, what's that, Blab?
Blab.
Yeah.
Which allows audience participation.
Yeah.
I don't want audience participation. Those guys are jerks. I mean, shoot. Edit note.
If I wanted your opinion.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll see how the listeners take to this and see if anybody actually wants to listen to us ramble or not.
I don't even want to listen to us ramble right now.
I expect lots of feedback of like, dear God, it was great up until the last 10 minutes. Then it just all went into the can.
Just make sure you put that after the outro track. This is just for people that actually let their MP3 player keep going. What the hell?
People that have their podcasts in playlists.
Their credits already rolled and they're still talking.
There's like 15 minutes left. What the hell?
Do these morons even know the mics are still on? Nine.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of, you did get that URL, didn't you?
I did purchase homestarrerunner.com.
That's great.
I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet.
That'll be porn. Our supplemental.
Porn. Yes, because that name lends itself to pornography.
I don't know what you're talking about. Marzipan is hot. I do her.
For people that are into broomsticks.
Yeah, that'll be our supplemental cast when there's nothing else on the show. All right.
All right.
Let's go ahead and just end this.
Okay.
Well, put us out of our misery. Sorry, Mom. You had to listen to all this extra crap.
My mom's way behind.
My mom doesn't know what a podcast is.